to the end, to the end. And if you call me love, I'd be you. If not in your eyes, then in your heart, I will appear. Like cutting ribbon edges easy through the year. Sweet and low, now how you cry. I won't abide to dry your eyes. I remember the way your uncle died, and it haunts me in the night. All the blood is your memory. You can't escape it now, would you please? You're still sleeping in a bed.
Drink salt water to forget. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. Won't you soon bring your hips to me? Oh, bring your hips. Oh, oh, bring your hips to me. To me. Oh, bring your hips to me. Oh, bring your hips. Oh, oh, bring your hips to me. To me.
Good morning and welcome to Listen Local, the bi-weekly webcast from your neighborhood news source, Mission Local. Nationally, we've just entered Women's History Month. The Mission has a significant place in the history of feminism and human rights activism. In fact, we have a physical and cultural fixture of feminism in the neighborhood called the Women's Building. With me today to talk about the history and the work of the Women's Building is Women's Building board member Laura Pereira. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good, it's going great.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
So I want to start with one of the most frustrating assertions that I hear, whether implicitly or directly to my face, and see what you have to say about it. And that is, I'm a woman and I live in San Francisco, one of the most progressive cities in the nation, and it's 2017. Women have equal rights. Why do we need the Women's Building and why do we need it here?
The Women's Building is hugely important to the community right now in this moment in time. Not only does it serve women and families of the Mission, but it serves, there's immigrant services, there's services for younger girls, there's services for women who've encountered violent acts against them, and there's resources. We have resources to help people find jobs who don't speak English. We have bilingual resources. We are so important at this time because we promote inclusivity and we want to be a sanctuary for people.
And when you say inclusivity, what does that mean exactly in here? Who are we excluding that we need to include?
Sure. I think we really help people who are underserved. I think people who don't necessarily consider themselves part of the mainstream, they're kind of left behind in their communities. People who don't make as much money, people who don't speak English, people who've just come to this country and don't know the area, they don't know anyone. So I think, you know, people who really need the building are the people who are seeking connection, who are seeking community.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you originally got involved with the Women's Building?
Yes, I actually was seeking, I've lived here for about 5 years, but I was seeking more connection with my Hispanic background. And not only I found some programs in the Mission, but I started volunteering with the tax program that we have every spring for people, and for just shout out for the tax program.
What's the tax program?
Every spring at the Women's Building, basically people who can't afford to do their taxes, we do them for free.
Wow.
So people can call and make an appointment. And so I was the volunteer who kind of picked up the phone and made all the appointments. and people would come in and we'd do their taxes. So I was kind of seeking a way to connect with my own community, and also with my Hispanic culture. And it so happened to be that this intersected heavily with serving women, which I am deeply passionate about. And I was super excited. I couldn't believe nobody knew about volunteering at the Women's Building. I was super surprised. So I was very excited to be able to serve the community in that way.
So you were just saying that, you know, people didn't know about this program. Do people know what the Women's Building is when they walk by it?
I don't think so. I find that a lot of people that I talk to are always like, oh yeah, that's the pretty building on the way to Dolores Park. We hang out there, but we don't know what it is. But I think people think it's a variety of things. And it is. I think it's, I would best describe it kind of like as an incubator of women's organizations, because not only do the Women's Building owns the building, which is amazing. It's the first women-run, women-owned community center in the country. Yes. So that's true historic fact.
Wow.
And they're actually replicating a lot of the Women's Building philosophies and how it runs in New York. So we're kind of super proud of that. But we're kind of like an incubator because we house a few nonprofits. We give them affordable rent so they're able to stay in the city. There's immigrant services. There's, you know, people can go at a low cost to see a lawyer. There's violence against women. There's resources for women who kind of find themselves. There's Girls Who Climb, which I've volunteered with before, and it serves young girls and teaching them skills to kind of become more empowered women and like climb and go out and do outdoors things. So
literally climb?
Yeah. So literally climb. Yeah. We would go to Mission Cliffs and like take them climbing. Wow. So that was a pretty cool program. So I'm proud that it's just such a variety of programs. And then at the core, it's the Women's Building who houses these nonprofits, but also provides services for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the community resource room, which is now open, I think on Saturdays now. We have more hours open for people that want to find jobs, people who don't necessarily speak English. So we do have bilingual services and help them do their resumes and kind of help them with the job search, train people on with using technology. I think right now people are, especially right now, after the recent election, I think people are a little intimidated to seek resources.
And really?
I mean, we are a sanctuary city.
Okay, so we're talking about immigration.
We're talking
status.
Immigration a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think we welcome everyone in the community who needs these resources. So I think it's needed now more than ever, and we're trying to raise more awareness and more, and honestly more funds to help serve these communities members.
So, you know, I want to talk especially about what you just brought up, sort of inclusivity and serving people who are maybe underserved in their communities. How has the election, like you mentioned, impacted specifically female immigrants? Is there something about being a woman and an immigrant and in an unfamiliar place and having to make it that's different, you know, for a woman than it is for maybe a man might be?
Sure. I mean, I can't really speak to that specific experience because I haven't been through it myself, but I could imagine it being challenging if you're alone in a new place, I think, for anyone.
Do clients express that to you?
Yeah. I think I don't volunteer there myself, so I can't speak to that.
Oh, okay.
But I think there's a higher demand for resources, but there's also a level of trepidation and, you know, caution that people are taking with the environment. I think we're lucky that we live in San Francisco and it is a more progressive city, and it is a city that is wanting to remain a sanctuary city and is fighting for that. But other places are probably not the same.
And San Francisco also, even though it has a reputation for being very progressive, right now is undergoing massive gentrification. And women from minority backgrounds, I would say, are being more pushed out more heavily than women of, you know, who are white.
Sure.
And I wonder if the Women's Building has observed the impact of that, and what about it works to be intersectional in terms of culture, in terms of race, any type of diversity that's really needed now.
Sure. I mean, I think we have observed, obviously, a lot of our services are used mostly by women. And if you help a woman, I think the impact is so much larger because a woman is trying to pull her family up, right? But we also, I think we also find ourselves serving men. But like I said, just women right now feel vulnerable and men as well, you know, people that have lower resources and are underserved and are immigrants and people who are getting displaced because they simply can't afford to live in this neighborhood anymore. It's changing so fast.
Yeah. I mean, do you find that people feel marginalized because of gentrification?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And how does that, how do they express that when they come to the women's building?
I think it's been illustrated in the demand for higher services. I think we've seen a lot more help and a lot more demand in you know, finding jobs and stuff like that, and tax programs. I think the tax program is huge for the women's building and helping the community because we're making sure that people who work here don't leave money on the table when they're already earning such low wages.
Yeah. It's also interesting that the main thing that people need help with isn't getting an income. They have an income. It's you know, figuring out how to maximize it. Yep. Make ends meet, stay here, pay the rent, find a place to rent. I mean, I can't imagine looking for a place to live right now if I had a family that I needed to support. Yeah. Well, then, you know, on the other hand, there's groups that have been marginalized and people that have been getting pushed out of the city, but there's also groups of people who are flooding into the city that I think perhaps would benefit from a conversation about feminism. And I'm thinking here, of course, about the tech community. You know, Uber has been in the headlines constantly, in part about the fact that it has trouble with sexual harassment and with discrimination against women. And in general, this has been a theme for a long time. And I wanted to know your thoughts on how that's been playing out and your observations of, you know, the role of feminism in tech.
Sure. I mean, in my experience, I'm on the board of the Women's Building, but I also work at a tech company, at a healthcare tech company. And I come from politics, but I have been working in the startup world for about 5 years almost. And when I came here, obviously a lot of industries are male dominated, but I think the tech industry especially is very male dominated.
And so we hear.
Yes. And it comes with big challenges for women because, you know, you kind of fall to the common, I guess, cliches or stereotypes that you become the person taking the notes because you are the only girl in the room.
Has that happened to you?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or just like small things like that, right? Uh-huh. Are always kind of like subconscious bias that, like, I am sure our male colleagues are not intentionally doing, but kind of just subconsciously do. But my experience has not been as bad as a lot of other women's. So I'm grateful for that, but I am self-aware and I want to acknowledge that exists and mm-hmm. that it is real for a lot of women to face how to not only thrive and build their careers in a male-dominated industry, but I think it becomes a larger conversation about, like, how do we build more productive organizations? And I think that's where I see a really big opportunity for women and men to work together to be stronger and learn from each other. I think there's a huge disconnect. I think there's a lot of ambivalence for men when they hear feminism and when they should be allies of feminists.
Yeah, what does that mean for a man to be an ally of feminism?
I think the first step is to really acknowledge that these tendencies exist in the first place. I think just being able to acknowledge that it's a problem. I don't think that you know, we feminists intend to alienate men. I don't, or at least personally, I don't. I'm not about that, and I don't intend that to happen. But I think we should all support each other as humans on a very fundamental level, and that, and you know, and as women and men, we should be helping each other. I mean, and not only when you're working at a tech company, you're trying to solve a really hard tech problem and move the needle forward, and that's something that's really exciting and powerful. But you get caught in these dynamics that are not, that just hold, they hold us back.
And do they hold back women, or do they hold back everybody?
Everybody.
How?
I think, like you said, Uber, for example, they're having issues with those allegations, and they're spending so much energy having to deal with that, where they could be spending that energy on making their product better. So, in a sense, not addressing these issues is holding all of us back.
When we talk about these issues, you know, there's Susan Fowler, for example, and the article that she wrote about her experiences at Uber, and that really exploded, and there were some egregious examples in there. I mean, that was, you know, her reporting sexual harassment often and finding that it was explicitly ignored, and she was basically being told not to talk about it or it would end poorly for her. Does it have to be that bad for it to be an issue worth addressing? Like you were saying, that's not necessarily what you've experienced. I've certainly never experienced something on that level. But I would still consider myself a feminist, and I would still consider that a cause worth advancing and something worth talking about.
Sure.
And how do we have these conversations about feminism when we're talking about what people might dismiss as, like, you know, minor concerns, like being made to take notes because we're the only woman at the table?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it had to get that bad for it to be even addressed, right? Which is
right.
kind of ridiculous. And I think that's the unfortunate reality that we face right now. I think personally for myself, my own experience, I think I try to approach situations from a humanist perspective, and I certainly uphold and really, really... at a core, my feminist values are a really big part of me, but I think I consider myself a humanist. So whenever I'm in situations like that, I try to understand the other person that I'm having trouble with, or I'm kind of facing I feel like misjudged, or because I am a Hispanic woman in tech, so it's kind of a double whammy.
Yeah.
And you know, I try to understand the other person as a human being first of all. So I think addressing these things with compassion, but also self-awareness, and also just being truth and, you know, being honest with yourself about what you're facing. I think Susan Fowler, I think I'm very impressed, and I'm very glad that she did what she did. I think that's super impressive. It's one of, you know, like documenting everything. I think it was really smart of her. And I think we can start having these conversations a lot more with our coworkers. But I think there's a lot of ambivalence. I think people ignore it for too long, and I think we just try to suppress it.
Mm-hmm. Until it gets
kinda,
to a point where you can't.
It just kind of like boils,
yeah.
And then it explodes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like anything, right? Like any dynamic between two human beings, like if you don't address an issue, there's some resentment that inevitably builds.
Mm-hmm.
And it just sort of implodes. So I think at a very broad level, everybody should feel empowered to have these conversations and be more honest about them and more vulnerable. I think also I think tech, well, all business, I think in general, vulnerability is not something that is valued. And this is something that is very feminine, and that is not a value that in the masculine world where, you know, we live in a kind of like a patriarchy, a world of men where the way men behave and the way that they get promotions is kind of the way that the system is built. It's not built to support women and families. So I think we're going to start to see changes in that direction, where we're going to start seeing more of a balance where, like, fathers are given more, more leave to be able to be that caretaker and share that responsibility with their partner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my hope is that we'll see changes in a lot of policies that will be more family-friendly policies. You see countries like Sweden or who have very women-friendly policies and who are doing, their businesses are doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And they see a lot more representation from women.
I also noticed that you're talking about vulnerability and empathy and seeing the other person as a human being, which is a sharp contrast to some of the advice that I saw coming from others to Susan Fowler and other people who then came out and wrote about their experiences at tech companies or in business in general, which is, well, just sue them. You know, why are you sitting around accepting this? Why are you tolerating this when you could just turn around and sue them? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, first of all, it was very vulnerable for her to disclose
that was a risk
she went through. I mean, I read her accounts and I was very, very moved and impressed and just surprised, because that takes a lot of guts. It was very real. But so I think she, in a way, did opt to be vulnerable and also like cared about the work that she did. And she was very proud of that. And she said, I did good work and I'm proud of what I'm doing and I'm building on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to keep building on that. But she also was able to address the issue and acknowledge it, which I think is the first step and much more important. I think had she just gone for retribution right away, I think she would have lost that opportunity. So I think she might have more of an impact being vulnerable and disclosing all of this and giving other people courage to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And to come forward and to have these difficult conversations at different organizations. So I think, you know, who knows what will happen from these allegations. I don't think anything has come out of it just yet. Obviously, there's a lot of energy being fixated on that. But I think, yeah, sharing story, I think, is something that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was impressed, and I think that there should be more of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you know of any way that we can, in our personal lives and in our small circles of acquaintances, encourage that and have, you know, productive conversations about feminism and about women in this society and our immediate surroundings?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just my personal strategy is to just kind of try to look at humanizing, remembering we're humans. I think sometimes when we're feminists, we're like, we're on the feminist team and everybody else is not.
Which is exactly what people are afraid of. I mean, that's what people fear, right? The feminist team is not their team.
And don't get me wrong. I mean, I was very lucky to grow up. I grew up in Texas, in El Paso, Texas, and my father's a Mexican father. And he luckily was he was a feminist father, which is a sharp contrast to the way Hispanic women grow up. They usually grow up in very machista households. And my dad was very open, loving, emotional, and like rooting for the feminists. So I was very lucky, but I think he also challenged me to think more than, like, just look at more of, like, the value that I bring as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And how, and yes, that's also feminine, but also understand people rather than, you know, you're with or against them.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of mentality. So I think that's a strategy I would encourage people to try.
Absolutely. There's also one other thing you can do if you're interested in continuing this conversation. There's an exciting upcoming thing the Women's Building is doing. Feminist activist icon Gloria Steinem is going to be at the Brava Theater, I believe, on Monday evening.
No, Monday morning.
Actually. Monday morning.
At 10 a.m. Yeah.
Monday morning at 10 a.m. at the Brava Theater, talking to a local feminist leader, Latifa Simon. What are you excited to see there? Tell us all about that.
I'm so pumped. I am thrilled. I mean, Gloria Steinem is a legend. And she has very kindly agreed to kick off our speaker series. The women's building is going to start having a series of speakers that are women inspiring and bringing community together. So I'm super pumped that Gloria Steinem is the first.
How did you get her to come here? Wow.
She's a longtime friend of the building.
Oh, fantastic.
So she,
yeah.
She supports the women's building, mm-hmm. which we're really, really grateful for. And I think just having a conversation, I think she's done a lot of work about intersectional feminism.
Mm-hmm.
Not only race, race, gender, like everything together is she wants everybody to rise up together, which I think it's something that's great about her work. I'm really looking forward to hearing what she thinks about what we can do now, especially after this past election.
Yeah.
How communities can come together to heal and to empower themselves to make change in their communities. I'm super pumped about that. And it's International Women's Day next week as well. So, it's going to be a big week for the Women's Building.
Mm-hmm. And tell me about Latifah Simon and, all what she brings to the table and how she's going to shape this conversation.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's head of the Aconite Foundation. I'm pronouncing it wrong probably. But she's done a lot of work, in civil rights. So we're looking, the conversation between Gloria and her will be super interesting and dynamic and will bring very good perspectives.
Okay, yeah. Great. And then let's close with a little bit of conversation about what everybody in Mission can do to support the Women's Building, or if they need to, how they can get help from the Women's Building.
Absolutely. If you want to check out volunteer opportunities, go to Women's Building, thewomensbuilding.org,
mm-hmm.
And check out our website. And we have tons of volunteer opportunities from our text program to our community resource room and helping community members find jobs. And then you can also come out and support us and celebrate International Women's Day with us next Wednesday evening. We're going to have a happy hour. It's open to the public. We have a raffle, so you can buy raffle tickets. It's at 18 Reasons here in the Mission. So please come say hi and join us, talk to us. We'd be happy to chat about how we can all help out.
Fantastic. That's the end of our time today. You've been tuned into Listen Local, a project of Mission Local. Laura, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back 2 weeks from today with news and narratives from the neighborhood. If you'd like to get in touch, shoot us an email at info@missionlocal.com or on Twitter @MLNow. Up next is some music for a change of pace. Keep it right here on BFF.FM. Thanks for listening. Yeah.